The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this June 25th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. And you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. There's a lot to get to on today's show. Several guests are going to be on the show today. Multiple topics of conversation throughout today's show as well. We'll tell you all about it and preview it as we go. But joining me in the studio, as he does every single day, my man Christian Griffin. How are you, sir? Happy Wednesday to you.
Happy Wednesday. Making your way halfway through the week. As you mentioned, a lot of stuff we got to get to today. Some really exciting guests that we have lined up for you, but man, it feels like it is hotter than it has ever been here in the Auburn Opelika area, and I've done it before. I like to do it again, man. I appreciate everybody who has to work outside, and we're very appreciative for everybody that has to endure the heat, because it feels like, again, you mentioned it, took a little bit for summer to get here. It was an extended spring, and we had the fear that we were going to pay for it here in the middle of the summer, and hopefully not having to pay for it in the fall. But again, shout out to everybody out there. We appreciate everybody everything that everybody is doing, as my microphone almost just fell into my lap right there. But a lot to get to here this afternoon, as the NBA draft starts tonight, as Jani Broome is waiting to hear his name called. Where does home look like for him? Maybe a couple other guys for Auburn that slip into the late second round as well. We're also going to dive into a couple of the mock draft projections, talk about picks 1 through 10, where we think they're going to go, other big-time SEC names that are expected to hear their names called tonight, and a little bit of drama with a couple of the NBA players, their future NBA players, as their camps and their agents have basically refused for them to get drafted to certain places. And you feel like that's never been a topic of conversation, because it's been, well, it's an honor just to get drafted in general. But now you're getting to that point where I don't see myself fitting in with this program. I don't want to be drafted there. We're going to talk a lot about that. And then we're going to get Jordan Hill from Dogs 247 back on the phone lines as they wrap up the spring practices and recruiting continues to skyrocket in Athens. And we're going to talk to him about that and some other news right before SEC Media Days and some NBA draft projections for some of the Georgia guys as well. And then a conversation we meant to get to yesterday, but couldn't get to it. And again, it ended up being a fantastic problem with a bunch of callers, a bunch of questions. Just didn't have time to get to it. We might not dive too deep into everything here this afternoon, but some of the trade deadlines for the MLB, some of the big-time candidates, as some of the teams are selling, some of the teams are buying. Where does everybody stack up, and who are some of the top guys that could be on the chopping block? A jam-packed action show for you, and all of that coming up here in hour number one.
Yep, so we got a lot to get to. We will dive into it right now as the NBA draft begins tonight. And I had said yesterday that it snuck up on me between college baseball and then the NBA finals and the Stanley Cup finals and everything else going on. I mean, the NBA draft, I mean, feels like we were just talking about the combine yesterday or late last week. And it's feels like, man, that's been a couple of weeks ago.
Feels like we were still just now talking about where we think teams are going to finish up in the March Madness brackets.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like yesterday we were in here watching Tahai Pettiford dice up defenses at the combine, and we were like, oh no, here we go.
Oh,
right?
No.
It was like, not like this, right? But here we are now with the NBA draft that is here. It begins tonight in New York City. We will have both days of the NBA draft, day one, day two. You can catch all the action right here on ESPN 106.7, or for those of you that listen on our station website at ESPNAU.com or on the Radio Alabama app, you'll be able to tune in for full coverage of the NBA draft here on ESPN 106.7. There are some obvious things that are going to be happening in the NBA draft. I saw today, Christian, where Cooper Flagg from Duke, his odds to be the number one overall pick at some sportsbook. Are you ready for this? I've never seen this in my entire life. The odds right now on Cooper Flagg to be the number one overall pick in the 2025 NBA draft. He is minus 100,000. minus 100,000 to be the number one overall pick in the NBA draft. That is absurd to think about. And it's no surprise that he's the favorite. It's no surprise that he's the heavy favorite. But for it to be that absurd is just crazy to me. That is wild to me.
And for those that don't have that mindset or that knowledge, if you bet $100 on Cooper Flagg to be the number one overall pick, you'd make 10 cents. You'd walk away with $100 and 10 cents.
Yes.
That's absurd.
You would, I mean, you have to make, you'd have to bet $100,000 to bring home a $100 bill. That's how much the odds are in his favor right now. So, with that being said, it's pretty safe to assume that Cooper Flagg's going to be the number one overall pick. There are other big names flying around there. Ace Bailey's expected to go high. Dylan Harper is expected to go high. But we start our conversation with Jani Broome, who we know was working in the NBA Combine, who was working out for a bunch of different teams, was trying to get his evaluation, right, on where he could go, what he could do, and kind of what his potential was going to be. And I think everything was going well for Jani until he went through the verticality test. And that seemed to be the thing that everybody decided to jump on and spread all over the internet. And most non-Auburn fans decided to dive in on that conversation a little bit more than they typically would. And the fact of the matter is, his vertical's not all that great. But guess what? He doesn't need it.
When you're 6'11", I don't understand that entire topic of conversation of, well, he only had a 26-inch vertical. Yeah. And look at his height. Look at his arm span or his wingspan. You add all of those, 26 inches just adds on to all of that. I mean, we watching him know that he's not somebody that's going to touch the top of the backboard when he goes to try and catch an alley-oop, but the athleticism on that side of things is still very much there. In the NBA, you've questioned a little bit of the physicality and his lateral movement, especially with the ankle injury, which we talked about during that combine, you can tell is still not 100%, but you feel like that being the main storyline for the runner-up for the National Player of the Year and the winner of the SEC Player of the Year, it just doesn't feel like it has a legitimate conversation to it. You almost feel like it was just the media doing what it does because it knows that if it has the word Auburn tied to it, it's going to end up doing numbers.
Well, how many times did we talk about the comparison between Cooper Flagg and Jani Broome in the National Player of the Year conversation versus their NBA draft potential or their NBA prospect outlook potential, right? There was no secret. There was no denying. There was no way you could go against the idea that Cooper Flagg was not a more promising NBA prospect and is a more promising NBA prospect than Jani Broome. There's not a soul in the world that is arguing that. We didn't, and I didn't hear any Auburn fan or any Auburn media outlet say that either. But I do believe there is a home and a place and a spot for Jani Broome. I agree. I think his physicality got tested in his time at Auburn. I think he battled through it most of the time, but there were several times we saw it affect him. We saw it negatively impact him. And not that the NBA is the most physical league in the world, but they are the best in the world. And they are still going to hit you and make you earn it, even if it doesn't look that way, because they are professionals.
You're right. You saw a lot more of it 2 years ago of the first half Jani, it was where did this come from? And then the second half would turn it on. That would carry over for two games. And then all of a sudden you'd go back to that half of where the physicality kind of ate at him. You didn't see that as much, if really at all, at least not for a game, maybe a little bit here and there. But you can tell the way that his mindset worked. He really worked through all of that, and you could see, I would be willing to bet that that was something that the Combine told him last year when he was testing his name in the draft waters. And you hit on a good point that I was going to mention, which the NBA is not nearly as physical as it used to be. It is much more isolation. It is much more finesse than it is straight physicality. Even in the paint nowadays, it is not the I'm going to go through your chest. There's much more of the fadeaway game, the touch, tough shots. Mm-hmm. The one-leggers, it's not the I'm going to try and go and work my way, bully into the paint, and try and get you four fouls at halftime. That's just not the way that the NBA is run anymore. The SEC, night in and night out, had a much more nightly physicality standpoint, and you feel like Jahni Broome stood his own from that. So you almost feel like you're working your way, again, by no means do I want to say a softer league, because everybody is as strong and so much stronger than the college level to where it might just appear that way when you're sitting on the couch watching some of these games. But you feel like the transition to the game could benefit Jahni Broome. Then you bring up the statistics of his three-point shooting increasing and how many rebounds are given per game. I don't think anybody expects him to go up and be some starter that gives you 20 and 12 every single night. But if he can be that sixth man, or he can be the second big that comes into a rotation and can eat up minutes and give you 10 and 6 every single night, give you one of those corner threes or give you one of those trail step-in threes that we saw so many times throughout the year, I'd be shocked if there's not a team that is just foaming at the mouth, hoping that Jahni Broome falls to their team.
So as of right now, going into the draft, the latest update from ESPN in terms of their NBA mock drafts going into tonight, day one of the NBA drafting, and you can hear that here on ESPN 106.7 on national ESPN radio, Jahni Broome is considered to be a day two pick in the NBA draft. Right now, they have him going to the Oklahoma City Thunder, getting drafted by the Oklahoma City Thunder in a pick that they acquired from the Atlanta Hawks. Man, you start getting down there in that second round, and it gets really confusing because a lot of those picks are traded around and shared around and spread around. I mean, there's a lot happening in that, and for those who don't fully tune into the NBA or aren't all about the NBA, right, it can get very confusing.
Very much so.
But that is where they have him going, 44th. On day two, 44th overall on day two, Jahni Broome being drafted by the Oklahoma City Thunder.
And you feel like the Thunder, again, he's had a lot of workouts, a couple of workouts in Oklahoma City, and they had really, really positive things to say about him and the style of basketball that they play. If you watch it, I mean, again, the winner of the NBA Finals, that group is so young, and they did everything so strategically 3 or 4 years ago with the Kevin Durant trades and the Russell Westbrook trades and the Josh Giddey trades. All of those you can now look at right now, and they have the youngest team in the NBA. Believe it or not, if you haven't seen those graphics of comparing the Thunder versus Auburn, you saw that all throughout February and March this time earlier in the season. But they've done it in such a way to where, although they won the finals, they still have so many picks because you're not seeing it anymore like you used to, just a straight 1-for-1 trade, a point guard for a point guard, or a shooting guard for a shooting guard, or even a star power forward for the shooting guard and a role bench player. You're mm-hmm. seeing so much of it for either cash, or it is the, we're going to give you our guy, we're going to give you 2 second-round picks next year and our first-round pick the following year. And so there's so many things that go into it. Jahni Broome on the Thunder, you feel like, has created a lot of buzz. And again, that's one of those teams, man, how could you not want to play for somebody like that? You talk about his ability to screen and roll that we saw at Auburn, his ability to drive in, catch the lob, catch the bounce pass, and lay it up with the left hand, or show that touch that he has on that SEC logo. That's what they need. That's what they used with Hartenstein. That's what they've used a little bit with Chet Holmgren, but use his perimeter shooting a little bit more. But an Isaiah Hartenstein type of guy that Jahni Broome could develop into with a team like that, man, he could make a career out of being that physical screener that puts up 10 and 6 a night.
I'm glad you bring up Hartenstein, because I was going to ask you, could he become that?
Yeah.
I think that's the comparison I went to immediately, especially when I heard...
Hartenstein right now has more physicality.
Sure.
But that would be something that you feel like that Jahni Broome would learn, and maybe rather than the screen and roll, it's more of a pick and pop, mm-hmm. to where all of a sudden... Shea or J-Dub is getting downhill, and you see that behind the bounce pass or Jahni Broome wide open at the top of the key, you bury a triple.
Or top of the key on the corner. I mean, something like that.
Exactly.
I mean, we've seen Hartenstein do that. I mean, look at Chet Holmgren on that team, too. He wasn't shooting threes in college, but he's a pretty darn good three-point shooter now on the Oklahoma City Thunder. And so I think that could work out. I do fear that Jahni Broome is one of those players that has the potential, but there might be a little bit of concern still with several organizations around the league. I fear that he could be somebody who's drafted and moved rather quickly and could end up somewhere else. And if that's the case, if you're him, you've just got to take whatever they give you, man. You just got to get in there and get to work and see what you can do, slim up a hair, get a little bit quicker, and just learn what your role is going to be on whatever NBA team that you're on. And so we expect that to be the only name we hear in the draft as somebody who actually gets drafted. Any chance that there's just a miracle and he ends up in the first round, do you think? Or is this just a lock, he will be a day two type of guy?
Yeah, I mean, he was always had the conversations of late second, early first, and I think the combine pushed him back a little bit. And I don't think that's simply because it's a knock at his athleticism or truly a knock at his vertical, but it's a knock of it's a little bit more risky because that ankle, because the lower body is still not 100% healthy, at least it wasn't at the combine, of where it makes things just a little bit more risky, right? If you're either a team like the Timberwolves or you're the Nets who have the 31st, the 36th, or the Pistons with the 37th, those were kind of those teams that had the shot at him if it was late first, early second, but he's slid just a little bit because he's a little bit more of a risky pick. And again, I don't hate seeing him middle of the second round because you feel like he can be one of those developmental pieces for one of these franchises. And you're right. If he's somebody that gets drafted and 3 days later they work out a deal and he goes wherever else, then that just means that he's put in a spot where he can do a little bit more a little bit earlier on and continue to work his way like he's done his whole entire career.
We expect him to be the only one that hears his name get called in the NBA draft. But there's another guy that could find his way onto an NBA team, one we've talked about that we believe could be very, very beneficial for any team that decides to take a chance on him. We'll talk about him, how he could help a team in the NBA, plus what the mock drafts are saying. Some of the guys around the SEC, around the country that we are familiar with as well. We'll talk about all that coming up here as we're just underway on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7 as we're talking a little NBA draft, which is coming up tonight. Day one coverage begins tonight, 6:30 Central Time, right here on ESPN 106.7 and ESPNAU.com. And we expect Jahni Broome to hear his name called in the NBA draft, but another Auburn Tiger who is looking to find his way onto an NBA team is Dylan Cardwell, a guy that we've talked a lot about, someone we had the pleasure of talking with all season long for Tiger Takes, which is brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. We've had the chance to speak with him and actually got a chance to catch up with him at a baseball game. I believe that was the regional at Plainsman Park.
Yeah, it was Friday night, I believe. NC State game, I believe.
Yeah, one of those. Yeah, the Friday or Saturday night game.
Him and
Drake were there. I got a chance to talk to Dylan for a few minutes and just ask him how the combine stuff was going, because that's when that was. Mm-hmm. And he said he felt very confident that somebody was going to move some things around and make something happen for him. And I think a lot of people agree with that, Christian. And we've talked about the benefits that he can bring to an NBA team. He brings his size. He brings his speed. He brings his agility. He also just brings his effort and his IQ. I mean, take off the orange and blue glasses here for a second and take off the fan favoritism that Dylan Cardwell brings. If you're an NBA GM, you have to look at this guy and say, man, let's sign him. Let's just see what the heck happens. I mean, you can't lose by signing a guy like Dylan Cardwell, in my opinion.
No, you can't at all. I mean, you talk about the athleticism that we've seen even since he was a freshman at Auburn, and it worked from being straight up raw athleticism to then you mentioned the basketball IQ showing up, getting a little bit taller, getting a little bit more physical. I mean, every single athletic gift is there. The defense is there, man. And you saw this year his ability to grab offensive rebounds and not look to score, but look for the point guards to kick it out for the open three. That's what the NBA lives off of. Mm-hmm. So for him to be able to sit there and use on his benefit and have on his resume to say, yeah, I can get you 3 or 4 offensive rebounds a game and kick it out, and that can lead to 9 points and make a point guard very, very happy. It's also very low risk from the standpoint of, although, yes, the scoring is, that's the biggest question mark, is the natural ability to score, especially off of an offensive rebound if it's not at the rim. The NBA will be able to develop that 6-8 foot touch shot, and you would imagine they'd be able to work a little bit on the free throw side of things as well. But you would also take that from the standpoint of he's not somebody that needs to have the ball in his hands. The NBA is such a ISO league of there's 5 guys on the floor that can score and demand the ball. And that's why you see so many of these trades, because guys are unhappy scoring 15 points a game because they're only getting 12 shots when they could be getting 18, 19, 20 on these other teams. Dylan Cardwell's a guy, he could give you 4 points every single night, but be more than happy playing his 15, 20 minutes early on because he does everything else so well on the offensive side of the basketball. I mean, we mentioned with Jani Broome, but the physicality on screening, his ability to catch the lob, his ability to rebound, and the biggest thing that I just mentioned, which was what we saw this past year, is his ability to grab a rebound and almost gives off the a vibe on the football field of a quarterback who's trying to break through the pocket. And rather than just breaking the pocket and trying to get upfield and tuck the ball and run, he allows his receivers to get open. And while he's scrambling, still keeps his eyes downfield and tries to hit the home run along on the receiver that's wide open. That's what Dylan Cardwell does on the offensive rebounding side of things. He gets the ball, lands, and he doesn't feel like he's in a panic. He might pump fake to the top of the key, kick it to the corner, and all of a sudden you have that wide open three. There's going to be a team that takes such a big chance with him, and it's going to be such a big payoff.
I really do hope so, and I think most Auburn fans feel that way, and so we are of course big fans of him here on ESPN, and we really are cheering for him and Jani, and hopefully those guys will get their chance at the next level. But you start looking around while we have a couple of minutes at just some of the mock drafts and kind of what they are projecting the draft to look like tonight in terms of guys that we are familiar with, whether it's from the SEC, ones that Auburn played this year, or just relevant players who could be superstars. We told you earlier about the historical odds that Cooper Flagg has to be the number one overall pick at minus 100,000. For those of you who are betting folks, you know exactly what that means. Dylan Harper from Rutgers, this is according to ESPN, that would put Cooper Flagg in Dallas as the number one pick, which just re-signed Kyrie Irving, which I thought was very fascinating as well. You got San Antonio at number two, expected to take Dylan Harper from Rutgers. The 76ers are supposed to take Vijay Edgecombe from Baylor, who I think is a really, really good player. You've got Knepel from Duke, who is supposed to be going to the Hornets at number four. The Jazz expected to take Jeremiah Fears from Oklahoma at the number five overall pick. Good or bad for the Jazz? Good or bad for Fears?
That's what I was going to say. You feel like they're so point guard heavy right now. I mean, obviously somebody like him that's going to bring a whole lot of athleticism, but when you have Isaiah Collier, you have Colin Sexton, you feel like those two are the main ball handlers, it makes you wonder what they're going to truly be able to get out of somebody like him. But again, we've seen what he's been able to do at Oklahoma and almost single-handedly carry this team into the SEC and into the NCAA tournament. So the athleticism is no question for Jeremiah Fears.
Look at number six, Ace Bailey from Rutgers. And that would give them two top six picks from the same team in Rutgers who was under 500 last year and missed the NCAA tournament. Make that make sense.
The crazy thing is Ace Bailey was projected to be number two or number three. And that's where I talked about a little bit of the drama of, I don't know if you've seen it yet, he has yet to visit an NBA team facility.
Yeah.
He has declined workouts, it says here, from Philadelphia, Charlotte, and Utah. And it's basically saying that his camp is, as of right now, politely declining any sort of draft status for any of those teams. Basically saying if he gets drafted, he's not going to play for them, which is a wild concept that you can now essentially pick and choose who you want to go and play for. And it's saying that this type of slide from number two or three all the way to number six could cost him $10 or $15 million if it were to happen.
I mean, I get it. I don't like it, but I get it. You want to go play a certain place with a certain team, maybe a certain coach, maybe a certain market. I get that idea. And if you're willing to give up some money to make it happen, good for you. That's just not how this works. That's not how the draft works.
I'm a top receiver, man. I'm only going to go play for Kansas City. Sorry, everybody else. I'm only going to get drafted by the Chiefs.
I mean, if you're good, I guess you have that flexibility a little bit. You have that power. And I can't get over that Rutgers is about to have two top 10 draft picks on the same team, and they were under 500 a year ago. That they had some injuries, yes, but that's still unacceptable to me if you're a college team. So, again, you can catch the NBA draft day one, day two coverage here on ESPN 106.7 and ESPNAU.com. We'll take a break, come back, because Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, he's back with us talking all things Georgia. He's with us coming up next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And just like old times, it feels like we're in the middle of the college football season as we welcome in our man from Athens, Georgia. He writes for Dogs 247 and covers the Dogs better than anybody else. Jordan Hill is with us on the phone lines. Now, my man, it is great to talk to you, and I hope everything is good for you over in Athens.
Definitely appreciate the chance to catch up with you guys. It was sort of like summer vacation these last few weeks, not having a chance to catch up and talk about Georgia, but school will be back in session soon, and happy to pop back on and talk a little Georgia with you guys.
Well, the month of June is just flying right by, and I saw something on social media the other day that July 2nd is the halfway point of the year 2025, and we are a week away from that, and that means there are so many things happening with football recruiting and the NBA draft, and then we've got SEC Media Days coming up next week. I mean, there's a lot to get to with you with things that are happening with Georgia athletics, and we'll start with football because recruiting has been on a tear, which it usually is for Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs. But four commits in the last 4 days where Georgia just continues to stack talent. They're getting them from all over the country, and their class is quickly climbing up the rankings once again.
Yeah, now with 21 commits in the 2026 class, and like you mentioned, Jacob, this has been a week unlike I have seen in a while when it comes to Georgia. Started with Sunday, they flipped Shedarius Tootle, a linebacker from Mobile, from Auburn. And then on Monday, they get Kamari Brooks, an outside linebacker, that local guy from North Oconee, which is the county over from Athens, Clark County. And then on Tuesday, they get Corey Howard, a defensive lineman from Valdosta. And probably about an hour ago now, as we're talking, they got Jay Lamar, a running back from Colquitt County. Four-star, a guy that Georgia really, really wanted. So big to win that one. So yeah, it's been a tear for Georgia this week. They are 21 commits, number 4 class overall in the country at this point, and they're not done this week. I'd say the name to keep an eye on, I believe he will be committing on Thursday, Craig Dandridge, a wide receiver from Alpharetta, Georgia, a guy that has really impressed. I think that was last week on a Corky Kell 7-on-7, just absolutely took over. That's quite the battle. I believe it's Georgia, Clemson, and a few other schools, Georgia Tech as well, if I'm not mistaken. So it's been a huge week for Georgia. And the good news, if you're a Georgia fan, is they may not be done quite yet.
Jordan, we know that the month of July is now completely dead, right? There's no more of the big tailgate barbecues. There's no of the big lake days for all of these recruits. How have you noticed Georgia take a different approach with the official visits in late June to be able to get some of these guys as you work your way into July to get some of those big commitments during this dead period?
I think the biggest thing is they've just maximized those opportunities to have folks on campus, those official visit weekends that made up the better part of June. And you looked at, I think it was the first 3 weeks of June when they had recruits come on campus. We're talking about 17, 18, 19 guys visiting all at one time, which is definitely a lot more in a single weekend than we were used to seeing. So I think they understood the importance of getting those guys on campus, getting them a chance to see Georgia, see what it would mean to play at Georgia and the opportunities afforded there. And, you know, I think a week like this is really the culmination of the entire month of June. So many of these guys that have committed to Georgia in this week alone have visited over the course of the month. So, yeah, I think they've really just honed in on how important it is to get these guys on campus, and especially get an opportunity to get guys who are thinking about coming to Georgia, you know, get them all together, but also getting some guys who are uncommitted around guys who are already part of the class. You know, I think it might have been 2 weekends ago, Jared Curtis, who's the quarterback commit, he made his official visit. You know, you get some guys that are already locked in saying, I'm coming to Georgia, allow them to build those relationships, and you know, they get to play a little bit of recruiter too. I don't know how productive or how effective those guys have been, but it never hurts to get some of the members of the 2026 class around some other guys and trying to help the cause and getting some more commits in the class.
Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 with us here on the phone lines on ESPN 106.7. I don't know or believe we've had the real chance to speak with you since all of this NIL revenue sharing, all this type of stuff has started to come about. And, I mean, we're right around the corner from that. I mean, July is just going to be the free-for-all, and all of these athletic departments and universities and things are going to have to decide how much money they want to put towards each respective sport. Have you seen or heard or been told anything about what the plans are with Georgia in terms of the revenue sharing between football, men's basketball, baseball now with it being back and competitive, and then all the other sports there on campus? Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, Georgia has decided to play it close to the vest, and it's sort of funny. When we talked to Josh Brooks, I want to say that was in May after an athletic association meeting, he had pointed to the back pay model that is being used in the House settlement and the percentage breakdowns. I think it might be 17 football, 15 men's basketball, and then a few other breakdowns from there. But a couple weeks after he said that, when we talked at spring meetings, he was basically like, you know, it doesn't really behoove us to share how exactly we are going to break down the numbers as far as what sports get which percentages. I would imagine that Georgia's is pretty close to what that back pay model wound up being. But at the same time, I think in the time between that athletic association board meeting, Josh Brooks realized, you know, we don't really have to share that information. And I think the thinking there is you don't want to give any of your sports the potential to be negatively recruited against, to go out there and, you know, say, there's a baseball coach at one of these SEC schools that his program's getting a little bit more money, you know, that they can point to what Georgia has said on record that they're allotting and say, well, look, you don't want to go there. Look, they don't really care about baseball as much as we do. So I think it was probably a wise decision for Georgia to play it close to the vest. But I do think it probably looks quite a bit like that, the breakdown percentage-wise that we saw in the back pay for the former college athletes that was a product of the House settlement.
We're talking about some of these recruits that are committing and hoping to be in Athens this time next year. But what about the guys that are already in Athens? Is there a buzz going around with spring practice finishing up, ready to get back into summer? Is there a different type of buzz that you're feeling or hearing going on the practice facility that might not be something that we've seen of previous years?
Well, I think it's one of those things where we're kind of going through and the countdown to, I think, SEC Media Days is really where it's going to pick up, because for Georgia right now, they're back into off-season workouts. You're hearing a little bit of buzz about some of the guys standing out, some of the guys who have taken care of business and put themselves in position to play bigger roles in 25. But I think everyone is just anxiously awaiting Media Days, which is, you know, I guess this year probably be about 3 weeks before Georgia starts fall camp. And then when fall camp gets here, I think Georgia will probably get started one of the last days in July, given just how the calendar falls and how Georgia's schedule usually looks. But once you get to media days, it's sort of the ball rolling downhill. You know that the offseason is almost over, and then you get to fall camp, and it's something every day. And that's when the excitement really builds, when they're back on the practice field counting down the days in camp and getting ready for the start of not only the new season, but also the school semester. Once that really gets rolling, that's when you know the season's almost here.
I'm not sure if we'll have you on again between now and SEC Media Days. It just kind of depends with the holidays, you know, with 4th of July and things like that. I mean, other than, yeah, the roster and kind of the transfers and things that have been brought into Georgia, do you expect there to be any specific conversations or questions that are asked of Kirby and Georgia or Kirby and things? And then I guess a projection on the players that could be there with Kirby at SEC Media Days also.
You know, starting with the storylines, I think a big part of the conversation will be, you know, can Georgia be one of the front runners in the SEC again? You know, they lost quite a bit from last year, and the big question is Gunnar Stockton playing quarterback this season. So I'm sure Kirby's going to get a lot of that. I also expect, since Kirby's one of the, you know, basically one of the statesmen as far as the coaches right now, that he will be asked his opinion on the settlement and revenue sharing and that sort of thing. And I'm sure Kirby's not going to say a ton about it, but he will be asked, just like Nick Saban was, on so many issues around college football. So I wouldn't be surprised there. And yeah, I was actually trying to kind of hone in on who I think is going to make the trip to Atlanta. I'd look at Oscar Delp, a senior tight end. I think he will be a guy that makes a lot of sense there. Looking elsewhere, Dalen Everett, he's a guy that I think has a chance to be a first-round pick when it's all said and done. So, yeah, they'll probably send three guys. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Those two seem like really good picks. And I'll shout out Christian Miller as well, defensive tackle, that is a very talented guy. They're counting on to do quite a bit. Feel really good about Oscar Delp and Dalen Everett being those guys. And I'll throw out Christian Miller as well.
The NBA draft gets started tonight. Georgia has a couple of names that they're expecting to be heard either tonight or tomorrow. Do you have any insights on Mr. Asa Newell? Last time I saw him was 19th to the Brooklyn Nets from Milwaukee. Are there a couple other names from Georgia that you expect to hear their names, whether that be tonight in round one or tomorrow night in round two?
No, it really looks like it'll be Asa will be the guy that gets picked from Georgia this year. And, yeah, I wrote a story earlier on Wednesday just trying to get a feel for the latest mocks. And it seems like his stock is kind of hard to figure out exactly when he will go off the board. Kevin O'Connor from Yahoo has him going 9 overall, which I thought was very high. That would be going to the Toronto Raptors. And according to the folks that Kevin O'Connor has talked to around the league, there is some buzz that Asa Newell could wind up in the lottery, which I think was Asa's goal when he decided to go pro and be a one and done from Georgia. But yeah, I've seen some projections to 19. I think I've seen projections as low as 25. You know, I think it's a situation. I feel pretty confident Asa will be a first round pick. My guess is probably in that 18 to 23 range. But, you know, Kevin O'Connor's covered the NBA for quite a while. I think he's got some pretty good sourcing. He could wind up being a lottery pick. And if you're Georgia, you're definitely rooting for that, not only because of the opportunity that means for Asa, but just the opportunity to sell that, you know, to show that you got a guy in and was able to turn him into a lottery pick. And, you know, it didn't go, they didn't win quite as much with Anthony Edwards, but we are just 5 years removed from Anthony Edwards being the number one overall pick. So anytime you can get guys going off the board early in that first round, it's always going to be worthwhile for the program.
Well, that's kind of where I was going to go next, Jordan, was the idea if Mike White can build this at Georgia, this idea that you can go there and not only compete in the SEC and win some games and start making the tournament on a consistent basis, but also being able to go pro, right? Develop in the right ways and be able to say, yeah, if you go to Georgia, you have a chance to go to the NBA. I mean, that is a huge boost and a bonus to at least just compete with the other programs in this conference. Wouldn't you agree?
100%, especially if you're getting in the fights and recruiting battles for some of that homegrown talent. You know, Asa Newell wound up playing high school ball in Florida, but he actually grew up in Athens. He was in Athens for probably 5 or 6 years of his childhood, so had some attachment to the chance to come back. And, you know, I think Georgia would have liked to have had a deeper NCAA tournament run than they did. They get blown out by Gonzaga in the first round, but now, when we talked to Asa, I guess that was probably July or August last year before the start of his freshman year, he was very candid that his two goals were to get Georgia back in the tournament and to be a one-and-done pick, that he wanted to come to Georgia, show that he was an NBA-caliber prospect, and then move on. And, you know, it had its up and down, as it always does for any player, but he achieved those two goals, and he played really well. Was SEC Freshman of the Week 4 different times during his lone season at Georgia. So, yeah, I think it's a great example, and I feel confident. I'll pay attention to the social medias, the Georgia basketball accounts these next few days. Once he's drafted, I have to imagine you're going to see a lot of them praising Asa Newell, showing him with his new team, and using that in recruiting, because you know, so many of these guys that are coming out of high school, the dream is to be playing in the NBA. Anytime you can have an example like Asa Newell is going to do nothing but help your pitch when you're trying to get guys to come to Georgia.
He writes for Dogs247. He's with us every Wednesday throughout the football, basketball, spring seasons as well, and we're happy to get him on here a couple of times throughout the summer. Jordan Hill is on the phone lines with us. Man, we appreciate you hopping on. Tell people where they can find your coverage, what you got going on over the next couple of weeks before SEC Media Days rolls around right down the road from you, my friend.
Definitely. Dogs247.com on Twitter, at Jordan Davis Hill on Twitter, at Dogs247. So getting through these dog days of summer, going to try to roll out an all-quarter century team for the Georgia Bulldogs the next couple days. Should have the offense on Thursday and the defense on Friday. Going to take a little vacation around 4th of July, and then we're hitting the ground running. We'll be in Atlanta for Media Days. We'll have some good stuff there. And if there's any Georgia fans listening, we still got a 50% off sale over at Dogs247. I'd encourage them to jump on board, because as we talked about earlier in this hit, the recruiting is at a all-time rampant pace right now for Georgia. And I think if they sign up and come join us on the Junkyard, they'll see that there's more good news on the way.
My man, enjoy your couple of days, hopefully a couple of weeks off before SEC Media Days. We're excited to see you in Atlanta this year.
All right, sounds great, guys.
That's Jordan Hill, Dogs247. Check him out. He's our man. We have him on throughout the entire year, football, basketball, into the spring. He is our weekly guest for all things Georgia athletics. I've said this so many times and feel that it's important for us to cover the rivals of Auburn and what is going on over in Athens, and we'll do the same thing for Alabama and Tuscaloosa, try to get another Alabama writer on consistently like we have in the past. And I just think it's important to cover all sides, man. I think a lot of Auburn people, they may not like what's happening in Athens, but they do care about what's going on over there. And with recruiting right now, they continue to dominate the South. And we appreciate Jordan Hill hopping on with us once again. We'll take our final break, come back, wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Jordan Hill, Dogs247. Great to catch up with him. It's been a while since we've had him on, just because he doesn't particularly cover baseball. His site does. Dogs247 does. I believe they made a new hire to cover baseball. But just through kind of some spring practice and things, and took a couple of weeks off, but good to catch back up with him, and always appreciate his time and his information, so check him out if you want more Georgia coverage at dogs247.com.
We don't have too long, but have to dive into it a little bit. We've talked about it for a couple of days, but for the MLB side of things, on the top 50 trade deadline candidates, again, this is an article from ESPN with some of the teams looking to be buyers, looking for some of the teams to become big-time sellers, and man, there's a couple logos on here that lead the way that you're relatively familiar with.
Stop.
With Alex Bregman, Jaron Duran. You also keep on scrolling and you're seeing guys like Aroldis Chapman. The Diamondbacks are in there as well with Gallen, Merrill Kelly, and Josh Naylor. Eugenio Suarez is in there. Man, you feel like he's worked his way into an easy all-star game this year. But yeah, the Diamondbacks, the Orioles, and the Red Sox kind of headline the stars for the sellers. And, I mean, again, there's going to be a whole lot of buyers. We thought Atlanta was going to be in that selling category, but your thoughts on your career 500 team being sellers at the trade deadline, which, in case anybody is wondering, that is July 31st every single year, and I believe they bumped it up this year. It is now at 6 p.m. Eastern time is the last time that trades can be made.
I don't know how to feel about the Red Sox anymore. I really don't. I genuinely don't know how to feel, because every time we try to do something good, we turn around and do two things equally as bad. And
it's like the Mavericks.
It really is. Like it truly is incredible. And look, I can't be upset. I can't. We've won 4 World Series titles in my lifetime.
Okay.
I can't be upset. But since 2018, with one of the most magical teams I've ever seen, one of the best teams I've ever seen, we've been 500 since.
But thankfully, all of those guys are still playing for the Red Sox, not being stars elsewhere. Right,
right? Yeah, not being superstar, all-star, World Series champions on other teams around Major League Baseball. Yeah, no way that could happen, right? I swear on my life, if Devers goes and wins a World Series in San Francisco, I will lose my mind, okay? But, I mean, look, the Red Sox are selling. The Celtics are selling, which I think the Celtics did good. I hated to see Kristaps Porzingis get out of here, but you saved a good chunk of money. Jrue Holiday is the same way. I know why you're laughing, and I can't say what I wanted to say, but
there was a brief.
Yeah, it almost slipped out. I can't lie. It's okay though. Yeah, the Celtics are selling. The Red Sox are selling. Just sell the whole team. Just sell the whole city. The Bruins suck too. I mean, it's fine. It's whatever. At least Atlanta's winning games, right? The Braves are winning.
kind of. We're back.
Back to almost 500. Well, we'll be back, I think, in a couple of minutes for hour number two, where we do have Double D Wednesday. We do get to talk to Daryl Daprich. And hey, don't worry, Auburn fans. You did pick up a recruit. You picked up a commit, and it's massive. We'll talk about him when we come back. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. If we, or if you, rather, missed any of hour number one, we had a lot of fun. Got to talk a lot of NBA draft that is tonight. Of course, Jani Broome, hoping to hear his name called either tonight or tomorrow. Talked also about Dylan Cardwell and what the odds are of him either hearing his name or finding his way onto an NBA roster, so got to talk a lot about that, plus some of the other names who are going to be drafted over the next couple of days. And then we also talked to Jordan Hill, our longtime Wednesday guest. We had a couple of weeks off with him, brought him back on for a summer check-in as we are nearing the end of June, getting ready for SEC Media Days coming up in just a couple of weeks, and the fact that Georgia football recruiting is just off the rails good right now. And so all of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, you could check it all out on our station website in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, going to talk about something that we haven't talked about in forever. As Auburn basketball. That would have made more sense. No, just kidding.
That shows about where we are. Yeah.
Picks up a huge offensive line commit. And huge from the standpoint more so from him rather than the overall hype. We're going to dive into that conversation before we get with Double D, Daryl Dapperich, who will join us from 3:15 to 3:45, talking all things Auburn football recruiting. Are there concerns for him on that side of things, on the lack of commits, the lack of recruits that are putting the Auburn logo next to their name? The easiest way to get that fixed, and then how to manage or schedule the first five games. What are some realistic expectations when you hit that first bye week? What are some of his expectations for that? And then going to talk a little bit of NBA draft as well with Jani Broom and some updated college basketball bracketology. Again, this is something that is always way too early. And Joe Lunardi says that for right now, he updates it about every month, if not every couple of weeks, but won't really do as much throughout the summer now that some of these names have found their home, or just about all of their names have found their home. But where does Auburn sit? Where does some of the top other SEC teams sit as Florida is actually the number one overall seed in that bracketology, but where do some of these other teams line up, and where does Auburn line up? All of that here in hour number two, but before we get into any content in the second hour, we want to remind you that it's brought to you by our friends over at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them for sponsoring the second hour of our show here each and every day on ESPN 106.7. He is Jacob Goins. I'm Christian Griffin inside the studio. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And Jacob, Auburn football. We've talked about the recruiting on the negative side of things. Man, this right here is just going to solve everything, right? A massive commitment overseas for the 2026 class. The Auburn Tigers land a big one.
A big one, in fact, yes. An offensive lineman from New Zealand. He is, folks, listen to this. I'm not lying when I say this. He is 6'7", 370 pounds. 6'7", 370 pounds. That is that dude's built like a storage unit. Like, he is massive in size. And you bring him in, his name is, and I have not heard it pronounced, like, vocalized, so I'm going to, and I looked for it, I couldn't find it. Nikau Heppe is how it is, it's how it looks, okay? Nikau Heppe. Nikau Heppe, it could be Heppe, I'm not sure. Again, I looked and I couldn't find a pronunciation for it on the internet. So if somebody finds one, send it to us, 334-784-1067 in the on-the-line text box, because I couldn't find it. So, again, a New Zealand-based offensive lineman. He is now going to be a part of the 2026 class in for Auburn. His rankings are kind of skewed because these overseas guys don't really get thrown into the mix of rankings until something like this happens. It's just kind of how it goes. But he is considered to be the 72nd ranked offensive tackle, according to 247. They seem to be, that is the composite on 247. They have him as the 66th ranked offensive tackle overall. And so the fact of the matter is, Christian, you go and get someone from overseas who's just a giant, and the potential is through the roof. I think that's what you recruit somebody like this for, is pure potential.
Yeah. I mean, again, you mentioned 6'7", 370 pounds. I do have a video of him saying his name. It might be Nico. It might be.
Okay.
I'm going to try. Can I play it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to do it through my phone rather than through the the internet pod or anything, but here, let's hear what he has to say. You can hear the cool accent, too. It's pretty exciting.
Hey, guys. Nico here. Just wanted to say I'm super excited to announce that I'll be committing to Auburn University. I want to say a big shout-out to everybody who supported me on my journey. I'm super proud to be representing my family and my culture along the way. Last thing I want to say is, War Eagle, baby, let's go! Woo!
Okay, I saw that video. I didn't see him introduce himself in the video, so yeah. I guess I didn't hear him say. So maybe it is Nico then.
Unless that's just the
maybe
accent,
the accent
playing
could
some
be,
tricks on it.
Yeah,
but
could be.
Regardless, yeah, you said he's listed as the 852nd player and the 72nd offensive tackle in the class. Yet that being said, it's hard to throw any sort of statistical number on it. It's almost like you're looking at the way too early top 25 the day before the transfer portal opens in college football because you have absolutely no idea. He's never played a snap of American football, but he's working with the NFL Academy overseas, again, that works with a bunch of these international players to get them ready, to get them recruited by the colleges. And it'd be interesting to hear, again, we talked with Auburn's punter Hudson Cock a couple of months ago about his process through it. So I wonder if he has any ties to the NFL Academy, because that would be a cool conversation to be able to have. But it said that Auburn was one of the first players to reach out to an international player for this class. And although he hasn't played a snap of real football, it's a huge step for them. They're taking that initiative and believing in me and seeing what I can do. Man, getting me out there, it's been a great time. Auburn, it's a different kind of place, and I like it here a lot. You feel like that's what it's what everybody gets to say. You get them on campus, and it's hard for them to leave, and you feel like that's going to be one of those puzzle pieces that you hope that you can figure out how to play somebody like that. Because if his name is Nico, 6'7", 370, obviously will slim up a little bit, but that's something you have to get on the football field.
It's fascinating to see how this has all kind of transpired, because this is something we have seen. Yes, we've always seen it with like kickers and punters and things like that. We always, I mean, you know, Les Miles was always big on that way back in the day, but it has been somewhat rare for football teams to go overseas and pick up big-name players. Auburn picked up a lineman from France a couple of years ago. You've seen it happen, yes, but this has been a huge trend on the college basketball side of things. Well, I mean, Auburn is a perfect example, right? You've gone and gotten a couple of players from over there, several teams and coaches and organizations have decided, hey, there's some pretty good talent on that side of the country, or that side of the world, rather. Let's go and see how it is. I do think there is a difference, though, in recruiting an international basketball player versus recruiting an international football player. Because, yes, while college basketball and NBA basketball, American basketball is different than overseas, basketball's still basketball. It's still 5-on-5. It's still running up and down the floor. You still have the baseline, the painted area, the free throw line, and the three-point line.
Minus the goaltending.
Right.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you still have the basics that are there. Football is played different just about any country that you go. I mean, even the Canadian Football League is different than what you play in the United States. And then you start talking about what they do in New Zealand, or even if they play football, like, again, like you were saying with Hudson Cock, who played several different sports over there, and football wasn't, American football wasn't a thing.
AFL, yeah, the Australian Football League, where you played almost in a oval or a circle.
Right.
And just, again, the basis is kind of there, but there's so many different aspects that can go into it.
So you wonder what the skill set will be, or maybe how the skill set will transfer from what he was doing in New Zealand. Again, the 6'7", 370-pound offensive lineman that Auburn has picked up in the 2026 class. I mean, I really do put this on a full potential recruitment and full potential commitment, but Auburn seems to like what they see, and they're going to give him a shot.
And you wonder if it would become more of a popular thing just simply because there's so many different skill changes when it comes to so many of these different types of football, but I wonder if it's relatively similar for offensive and defensive linemen, just because their roles could be at least remotely similar,
yeah,
or the physicality standpoint, or whatever the case may be. Auburn was one of the first to do it. You'd expect a couple more to do it. You see a couple of them every single year, and with this, Auburn jumps up to the 83rd spot in the recruiting class for 2026.
They jump to the 83rd spot. May want to find a different word. They creep, move, sludge.
Jumped, baby.
Snailed.
We sprinted into the top 100.
Well, I know somebody that will probably have comments on this guy, that, and a whole lot more. How about we get to Daryl Dappers? How about we go and snag Double D, who we haven't talked to in a couple of weeks, from Locked On Auburn and The Barn? We'll take a break, and he joins us next. It's Double D Wednesday coming up here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Auburn Opelika sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
It's that time. It is that time. It is Double D Wednesday with Daryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn and The Barn. It's been a little bit since we've talked to you, my friend. I hope everything is good in your world, sir.
Yes. Sorry about last week. I was out of town on a little business trip. But, I'm glad that I'm having the opportunity to talk to you. I probably should have talked to you last week. I got stuck in an airport, one of those deals where I thought I was going to be on a plane, but I was actually stuck in a weather delay. So,
well,
I hate that I missed y'all, but glad to be back on.
No, we always appreciate you and your time, and always thankful for when we get the opportunity to talk to you. And we've got you for a couple of segments, as we do most Wednesdays, and we're excited to jump into it, because as we near the end of June, there's still so much going on and to go over. We're going to start with football. We'll talk basketball in the NBA draft after our bottom of the hour break, but there seems to be some sort of an uproar, Daryl. Fans are kind of uneasy right now. Don't know if you've seen it or heard about it, but Auburn football recruiting's just not in a spot that fans are happy about right now.
No, and you know, I always talk about two things being true at once. So for the first part of this, for in the here and now, where we are in the moment, they absolutely have every right to be upset and concerned. I wouldn't panic yet, because I believe this story's yet to be written, the recruiting story. If this class was, you know, six in, five in, going into the end of October, I would understand. But I think there's a lot that's going to happen between now and signing day. There is some concerns, and there is some issues with losing recruits, kids flipping. But Auburn's had kids flip to them the last 2 years. And so I think what we're looking at is a situation where Auburn, in my opinion, and also from talking to some sources, there'll be some things probably in July that'll come down the pipe as far as some good, you know, getting some recruits and that kind of thing. I think this NIL, this revenue sharing thing, different schools are reacting to it differently. I also think that it's not an endless stream of money like most people think in college athletics. And if you look at what Auburn's done on the field in the last couple of years, there might be some heavy hitters that say, hey, I want to wait and see. Show me before I stroke that check, right? So there may be some funds, some NIL funds that were available 6-7 months ago, last recruiting class, that may be playing the wait and see game. And the second part of that is there's only so much available funds. I don't care what anybody says. Think of it as like, you know, a reservoir. And I think there's Auburn 2 years prior went heavy spending in the recruiting classes. And that was very evident in the fact that they had top 10 classes. They were okay in the transfer portal. It was not something that, you know, they did good. They filled some needs. But if you look at this year, it seems that Auburn went heavy in January in the transfer portal. So people that are negatively recruiting against Auburn with what's happening on the field the last two seasons, it didn't affect their transfer portal class at all. You don't get Singleton, Chaplin, Robinson, Murphy, and Jackson Arnold without spending a lot of money. And that happened, and it, you know, obviously Auburn got what they needed to get by that. And so they just chose, I think, to allocate those funds this year with the transfer portal as opposed to recruits.
Well, I guess my question would be, or maybe your message to the fan base, because we know where Auburn's recruiting class ranks. I mean, it's in the 80s or 90s or 70s, depending on where you look. So what would your message be on when it could get better, or if it will get better, on, or maybe just something to calm people down right now in the end of June?
Well, I honestly believe July is going to be a really, really key month for Auburn from a recruiting standpoint. So I think there's some things that'll be aligned again with trying to react to what's going on with this new revenue sharing proposal. I think that people are going to look at that and some of the, again, I don't believe that Auburn's going to have the class going into the season that they had last year because of two things, because of the results on the field the previous year and some heavy hitters saying, I'm going to wait and see. And because they went really, really heavy on the transfer portal. And why is that important? Because the two coexist. The pressure is there that you have to win right now. After, you know, 10-22 over the last four seasons is their SEC record. Hasn't had a winning season in 4 years. The pressure is we've got to win, and we've got to win now. So the vision changed, that we better get some players in here that can help us win right away. And that's why you see them went heavy on the portal as opposed to high school recruiting. So knowing that if you want some of these heavy hitters to keep stroking checks or get back to stroking checks, you need to see some results on the field, proof of concept. So that's why I think it's going to be a little bit slower drip from a recruiting standpoint, but I think they're playing the end game. It's a gamble. If you can go ahead and win successfully this year and the dam breaks and you start to have 8-9 wins, the checks will come and the recruits will come. That being said, I still think in July, 3, 4, 5 key guys that Auburn's been pursuing in this class and into August will come on board based upon previous budgets, previous allocated monies, and that kind of thing. So it might get worse before it gets better. There might be a couple more recruits that jump ship. You know, there's some rumblings of that perhaps happening, but I do believe it'll all settle down. It'll all kind of find its level watermark. And by the time the season kicks off, recruiting will look better. And then the season itself should bring significant excitement if this roster lives up to what it's supposed to do. And then at that point, everything will take care of itself.
And you're getting to the point that I was getting to as we're talking with Daryl Daprich here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Winning just seems to cure everything, right, Daryl? And you mentioned the recruiting and how they're playing that long game. With July being completely dead, now some of those biggest visit weeks are going to be on Saturdays in the fall. And so how big is that Georgia night game? How big are the early games throughout the season as you work your way, and then hopefully an Iron Bowl that sets up to be what both teams are expecting? How can Auburn use those weekends to be huge recruiting weekends and hope to either get the words committed by a certain couple of guys or work their way to a possible flip either then or a little bit later on before signing day?
Well, anytime somebody gets on campus, Auburn's never had a problem getting kids to commit. And that's another thing, too, is some of these places that, you know, the Georgias and the Florida States, they've got tremendous atmospheres, too. But Auburn does its best recruiting when it's able to bring a kid on campus and experience everything that Auburn brings to the table in a game day atmosphere. That will absolutely happen when Auburn's playing Georgia and some of these other, you know, conference games at home. The problem is, at some point you have to win, and you know you have to show that it's just not about environment, it's just not about atmosphere. You have to have success. All the Tiger Walk and Eagles Flying and all that kind of stuff, kids still want to see wins on the field, and so I think that'll happen pretty quickly.
Darryl, we were also talking right before you came on the fact that Auburn picked up a commit in the class of 2026, somebody that wasn't really on many people's radar, maybe not on many people's boards. He is not from the United States. He is actually from New Zealand. The numbers on this kid are absolutely insane. 6 foot seven, 370 pounds from New Zealand. Auburn picks up an offensive lineman. Have you looked into this kid yet? What can you tell us on your thoughts on him committing to the Tigers?
Definitely a project. I mean, he defines raw and defines a project. I've heard his name pronounced Nike, but Heppy's his last name. He's 6'7", 370 from New Zealand by way of the NFL Draft Academy. So he's a kid that you're not counting on to play next year or even the year after. But his size, you can't coach, you can't teach. And he's not played a lot of football, so he's going to have to really get 2 years under his belt, learning from a good offensive line coach, working on his footwork. But my goodness, the tools and the raw tools are there. 6'7", 370-pound offensive tackles don't fall off trees. Auburn's in a situation, though, they can afford to be patient and take a project in this class because they had a really good offensive line recruiting class last year. They've done a really good job in the portal. This upcoming year, they should have one of the best offensive lines they've had in a long time, and they go too deep. And then when you look into 2026, guys like Dylan Senda, you know, DeAndre Carter, Brandon Shaw, some of those guys will be there and be ready to play and be able to step right in. So Auburn doesn't have to really get him ready to play until 2027, in my opinion.
Well,
and so you can afford to take a flyer on a kid like that that you don't feel like needs to play right away.
Well, I think Auburn fans are never in a spot, Darryl, you'll probably agree with this, never in a spot to complain about offensive line recruiting, right? You'll never complain when you pick up a guy who can play offensive line, offensive tackle, whatever the case may be.
No, you it's like starting pitching. You never can have too much, and you absolutely can stockpile them. And I know that Hugh Freeze is one of those guys that has a certain number, a magic number in mind when he thinks about how many offensive linemen he wants to have on his roster, and every year that he's been there, either through the transfer portal or through recruiting, high school recruiting, he's reached that number. What happened was there was a shift, a direction that shifted last year when they went and got Chaplin and Murphy, as those were two Power Four guys that were starting at USC and Virginia Tech. Remember, the strategy his first 2 years was to get some of the Group of Five kids. Although some of those, you know, worked out really well for Auburn, the Dylan Wade, the Britton kid, they worked out well. Auburn shifted its philosophy and is now going off. And because of that, Chaplin is perceived or projected to be a first-rounder next year. And Connor Liu, the center, the year after, could be the first, you know, one of the first centers taken in the draft. So, you know, with that and stacking classes of offensive linemen, you're able to take a flyer on a kid. And I think Auburn will get one or two more offensive linemen in this class before it's all said and done.
Auburn picks up a New Zealand offensive lineman, 6'7", 370 pounds, to the class of 2026. We continue talking with Darryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn and the Barn. We're flipping to basketball right after this. We got him for another segment here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Is Double D, Darryl Dapperich is with us from Locked On Auburn and the Barn, and we're going to have you out of here right around 3:40. I know you got to run, and so we got a few minutes to talk a little basketball for Auburn, where, of course, the NBA draft begins tonight, and for fans here in the Auburn-Opelika area, or for those of you listening across the state, across the country, you can catch full coverage of the NBA draft day one, day two here on ESPN 106.7 and ESPNAU.com in conjunction with ESPN Radio. And we expect Jahnine Broome, Darryl, to hear his name called at some point in the NBA draft. Most folks have him going in the middle of the second round.
Yeah, I think that's probably where he's going to go, and that's where he's been mocked. But again, it continues a wonderful run of Auburn basketball players getting drafted, something that was such a long, long drought for a long time. And now, you know, it's just one of those situations that's commonplace. I could see him going in the middle of the second round, and then I'm hearing some buzz that Cardwell may get drafted as well in the second round, perhaps late in the second round, and not have to try to sign as a free agent. So it'd be nice to see both Auburn's bigs get drafted in the same class, and maybe Cardwell can find a spot. I think Broom will be in the league next year, even if it's coming off the bench. You just hope that Cardwell can find a spot on an NBA bench somewhere.
Well, when it comes to Jani Broom and to Dylan Cardwell, Darryl, what is it about their respective games that will make them valuable to an NBA team? And then maybe on the flip side, maybe a concern for each guy that could make me turn an NBA team away, or just something that they have to fix when they get to the pros?
Sure. Looking at some strengths, I mean, Broom's just a natural scorer. I mean, he finds a way to score. You know, he's got nice size at 6'9", 6'10", which would make a perfect power forward in the NBA, a perfect four. That's a great size for a four. He's got great court vision. NBA likes their bigs to be able to face the basket as well, be able to have good court vision, find open cutters, that kind of thing with how good the guard play is. Broom checks all those boxes. Tremendous passer. He has a mid-range jumper. He can face the basket and score. A rim protector. Probably his concern is his verticality. And I don't know if that has anything to do with the ankle injury or what, but I think, you know, his vertical leaping and explosiveness off the floor might be an issue. But NBA teams can use him in certain sets and certain offenses where that may not be an issue. Cardwell is a defensive demon. I think people will love, NBA teams would love his energy, his athleticism up and down the court, the way he blocks shots, his rebounding. But he's limited scoring. You need to understand that if you are using a roster spot on a guy like Dylan Cardwell, you're not going to get much scoring from him. What you are going to get is rebounding, and you're going to get, you know, some really good defense as a rim protector. But if you try to put him in a game and think he's a guy that's going to give you double digits in the NBA, I just don't think it'll happen. That's not his skill set. And also, he's just got to be careful with the way the NBA game is called as far as fouls and that type of thing.
And so with both of those guys, I mean, you look at Jani, who's expected to be drafted. You said you're hearing a little buzz, though, about Dylan possibly being drafted. I mean, I think he will find his way on a team somehow, but you think there's a chance that he could actually be used with a draft pick?
I think so. I think he's done really, really well. Now, I'm not predicting that he will. I think there's a possibility. And the reason why there's a possibility is because some of the teams that have worked him out really like him and may not. You know, you get into the free agent type of game and you can sign with anybody. If you're a team that's picking late in the second round and you're like, I could see some value in a guy like Dylan Cardwell on my team, if you roll the dice and don't draft him, there's no guarantee you're going to be able to sign him as a free agent. He can go wherever he wants, the best fit. So that's probably why there's a possibility he could go in the late second round. I mean, NBA likes guys with that kind of size, and he's not a stiff. He's got a ton of athleticism. And so, you know, there's a role for players like that in the NBA. There absolutely is.
Darryl, I think we've had this conversation a little bit before, but Joe Lunardi throughout the offseason is updating his NCAA bracketology just for where he thinks these teams are going to be now that everybody has found their home, and it still has Auburn right at that 4 seed, but with the arrow pointing up, so has them projected a little bit higher, or says they could go a little bit higher. Does that surprise you at all, or does it give a little bit more surprise that teams like the University of Tennessee is a 2 seed, that Bama is a 5 seed, or that Florida, the defending national champion, is projected to be the number one overall seed?
No, none of that surprises me. I think that the way that this whole season has played out in the SEC basketball arena and how, you know, the recruiting classes and the transfer portal, it doesn't surprise me. I think that the only thing that I would say is that I would say, other than Florida, there's some fluidity in that 2 through 7, 2 through 8, where you could see them really changing and kind of flip-flopping throughout the year, absolutely.
Darryl, we appreciate you and your time. As always, my man, I know you got to run and take care of a few things. Plug everything. Tell people where they can find you a couple of times a week throughout several outlets.
Sure. Monday morning, 7:10, Double D Monday with our good friend Ben Taylor, WANI, and then Wednesdays and Fridays with Zach Blackerby, Locked on Auburn, 8 p.m., Sunday nights live, The Barn.
Awesome, man. Hey, we appreciate it, guy, and we'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Darryl Dappert's Locked on Auburn and The Barn a couple of times a week. He's with us on Wednesdays for Double D Wednesdays here on ESPN 106.7. So we appreciate him and his time as always.
Does this give you any surprise that Auburn is a four seed again? It's kind of where they were projected to be, one of the top 16 teams when everything is said and done. Or is there possibly another team in there? Tennessee is the two seed. Does surprise me.
That seems
a little bit.
Yeah, that seems a little high to me.
Especially if Zakai Ziegler, which as of right now, is not on the roster with everything going on that side of things right now. The 4-1 seeds are Houston, Florida, Duke, and Purdue, with Florida being the number one overall seed right now. Again, taking all of this with a grain of salt, Auburn is a 4 seed in the South, the Houston regional with Purdue, with St. John's, and with BYU as the 1, 2, and 3. As of right now, Auburn, the 4 seed, would match up against High Point, and then the winner of Gonzaga and Liberty. Give it to me now. Give me that bracket.
Yeah. I mean, I just think for Auburn, like, going into the year for Auburn basketball, the expectation is to be a top five team in the SEC and be a top five seed. I mean, 1 through 5 seed in any of the 4 brackets in the NCAA tournament. I mean, be a top 25 team this year. I don't think that that's a crazy thing to ask for if you're an Auburn fan of this team. And I guess more importantly, you're banking that or basing that off of the head coach. You're basing that off the fact that the lone constant here is the head coach and his staff, for the most part. I know there has been a couple of changes, and Auburn hired a GM a couple of days ago. Like, I know there are some things there, but you're basing that off of Bruce Pearl and his staff still being there and Tahad Pettiford coming back for another season. I don't think it's all that crazy to say the expectation right now even is for Auburn to be a top 25 team, a top 5 team in the SEC, and 1 through 5 seed in the NCAA tournament when March rolls around.
Right now, Joe Lunardi has Auburn as the 4th best team in the SEC based off of these final projections, with Florida obviously being a 1, which we just talked about, with Kentucky being a 3 seed in the Midwest, and with Tennessee being a 2 seed in the San Jose West Regional. And so right now, you don't feel like that would draw too many complaints, but it shows you that he's expecting the SEC to have a little bit of a drop-off compared to college basketball as a whole, which is what we've talked about, that other than Florida, I mean, you have Tennessee as a 2, Kentucky as a 3, which who we said could win the entire thing, and Auburn as a 4. I mean, there's other teams that are marched in there. It's not going to be the SEC covers up a lot of the 1, 2, and 3 seeds.
Yeah, I think the top of the SEC will not be as large this year. You won't have as many teams at the top, but the teams in the middle are going to be really darn good.
That's what I said. I think that my prediction was you're not going to have that giant drop-off of a tier list. It's almost going to look like you have your thumb and middle finger on the top and the bottom of the conference and just kind of squeeze, where there's going to be a lot in that middle tier.
I expect Kentucky and Florida to be the 2 best teams in the SEC. Just based off of right now, I think those 2 are going to be there. But I think the middle pack is going to be a logjam. It's going to be Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee, Arkansas. All those teams are going to be there who can beat you on any given night, are good enough to make a run in the SEC tournament and in the NCAA tournament, but maybe don't have the highest of odds to win the national title, but they're good enough to do so. Again, Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee, Arkansas are the teams that come to mind right now when I think of that middle of the pack upper tier two of the SEC for basketball this season.
Going on the left side, just working my way down and then going to the right side of the bracket in no particular order other than just seeing the seed. Mississippi State right now is an 8 seed. Arkansas is a 5 seed. Lenardi has Texas A&M and SMU playing as the play-in game for the 11 seed. Kentucky as a 3. You then work your way into the West with Vanderbilt as an 8, Alabama as a 5, Ole Miss as a 10, Tennessee as a 2, then back up to the top right, Florida as the number 1 overall seed, Texas as a 9 seed, Missouri as a 7 seed, and then down into the South, you have Oklahoma as an 8, Auburn as a 4, Georgia as a 10, and then it also has... Nope, it was the last four in, with Texas A&M being one of those last four teams in. So as you mentioned, a lot of the 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 seeds from that middle of the pack in the SEC.
Yeah, there sounds like there's a lot of those right now from Joe Lenardi. And look, it's inevitable that one of those teams, compared to what their expectations are, their projections are right now at the end of June, one of them will exceed those expectations. And then I think somebody from the upper echelon of the second tier, I think Florida and Kentucky are going to be very, very good. I don't expect that to not be the case. But I would expect someone from that tier three of those 6, 7, 8, 9 seeds to overachieve this year. And then I would expect somebody from Tier 2 to underachieve this year. And look, I think we have to be honest. I think it very well could be Auburn. If this team doesn't gel the way that it's supposed to, if they can't score the way they're supposed to, heck, if they can't take care of the basketball and defend the way that they're supposed to, Auburn could be the ones that end up being a 7 seed, and we're like, man, we were talking about whether a 4 seed was being disrespectful, and here we are as a 7 seed, right? I mean, that could be a legitimate conversation, but right now I'm not willing to bet on Auburn to be that tier 2 team to underachieve. Crazy enough, I think it's Alabama. I think Alabama's probably my... Now, they have had some good additions and bringing some things back and things like that that make them better, but I don't know. And if you're going off Lenardi's tiers, I'm calling Tennessee, because I don't think they're going to be as good as he thinks they're going to be.
Me neither.
My bet on a tier three team that will overachieve is Texas. Texas in year one under Sean Miller, I think it's going to be really, really good. Texas, no, they don't have Trey Johnson, but they've got a lot of dudes on that team.
Texas right now, that 9 seed, they'd play Cincinnati in D.C.
Give me them to be higher than a 9, a better than a 9 seed. Yeah. I think Texas could be a 7 or a 6 by the time it's all said and done.
Which is crazy to think that that's not something that would feel like they overachieved. That would feel like something that feels like it could be a very norm for them. Again, with Sean Miller now coming in from Xavier. Let's see if I don't believe just from the topic of conversation, Xavier's not on this list. So shows you that he was the reason.
I mean, he's he's a pretty good coach, I would say. I mean, he's a new coach in this league. Bucky McMillan's a new coach in this league. There are several new names around town that are going to make SEC basketball just that much better.
And a weird thing to look at as we're about to head to break. The first team out, Marquette.
Ooh, really?
Yeah. That's what he has right now with Shaka. Which, if they make it, they'll go... They won't make it past the second or the first weekend anyway, because they're always one of those heavy favorites that's a 3 seed that are 4 seed that gets bounced by a 13 or 14.
It really just depends on if Jacob Goins picks them in his bracket or
that's
not.
Fair.
If I pick them, they will not go anywhere. But if I don't pick them, they'll make it to the Final Four when they're not supposed to.
Book it now. Does Marquette make the Sweet 16?
No comment. I'm going to plead the fifth. Well, again, we appreciate Daryl Dappert for joining us on the show as he does most Wednesdays. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it up here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We appreciate you being with us. We appreciate both of our guests being with us today. Daryl Daprich was just with us from Locked On Auburn in the Barn. We also had Jordan Hill back on today from Dogs 247. He's our usual Wednesday 2:30 guest throughout most of the year, but of course right now with not as much actual news and things going on, we take a break from folks like him. But we felt like it was appropriate to get him on with a lot of the recruiting stuff going on in the NBA draft coming up tonight. And so that was in the first hour. We've talked about the NBA draft today. We've also talked a little Auburn football recruiting with a pickup of a New Zealand offensive lineman. And so a whole lot more. And then our conversation with Daryl. And so if you have missed any of today's show, be sure you go back and check it out on our station website, ESPNAU.com. That's also where you can listen to the show live every single day. You can also listen to anytime we have a live event here on the station. You can listen to it there as well, including tonight with the NBA draft, the 2025 NBA draft from New York City. You can tune in right here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. Coverage begins at 6:30 p.m., so the drive's coming up from 4 to 6. We'll have a little bit of ESPN programming and then the NBA draft. And so you can hear all the biggest names, hear their name called tonight. We'll also have day two coverage coming up tomorrow as well. That'll be 6:30 here, where we expect, again, Jani Broome to hear his name called tomorrow night. And then Daryl was saying he's been hearing a little bit of chatter that that Dylan could get drafted, not just signed, but possibly get drafted late in that second round.
Again, I don't think it would be overly surprising. You feel like there's not too much of a risk, but he brought up a good point where he was saying that if he doesn't get drafted, he can sign with anybody or anybody that gives him an offer.
Right.
He doesn't have to just say yes, not that he would say no like some of these other kids in the top 10 or top 5 are doing. But yeah, how cool is it that that's somebody like Dylan, you could hear his name called on Thursday. It'd be the definition of, man, just lucky to be there and I guess happy to be there. But, man, it would be so, so cool, again, being able to spend some time and get to know him and now Drake as well. Like, I mean, the family is incredible. So being able to have the opportunity of hearing his name, if not seeing his name signed with a professional logo here in the next couple of days.
So coming up on tomorrow's show, we will have Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC get to have his thoughts on everything going on in recruiting and some basketball things and kind of wrapping up baseball season as well after LSU wins the national title, transfer portal, NIL, all that kind of stuff. We're going to have a lot of fun with Chris Gordy tomorrow. We'll talk about the NBA draft plus some more football things. And Christian, you're out, my man. You are gone for the rest of the week. You are leaving and found better things to do, so you're out tomorrow and Friday and back on Monday.
Yeah, you're talking about taking breaks from some of the guests. I got kicked out of the studio, going back to the part-time role, and so it'll be more of the showing up whenever, and you don't really know when I'm going to be here, but I'm just going to be here. No, just kidding. No, taking the little, not quite a vacation, but something along those lines of the summer before getting back and hitting the ground running with SEC Media Days. And then, man, we're was talking about it here this afternoon of how close we are to high school football.
Yeah.
And it's so exciting, but it's also like, holy cow, we got to get completely prepared for that, man. I'm so, so excited for it. But, yeah, taking that little break before we come back on Monday.
Yeah, so you're out tomorrow and Friday, so it'll be me in here solo tomorrow. But again, we'll have Chris Gordy. We'll have a bunch of great conversations for you. And then Friday, our buddy Lance Dahl is going to come in and be with me for a free-for-all Friday. Him and I are going to talk so many things, basketball, football, recruiting, some of these changes that are coming to college basketball. They're talking about expanding the NCAA tournament. Also, I just got word that the regular season is growing for college basketball. They're going to be adding a game to the regular season from 31 to 32. So we'll talk about that tomorrow and on Friday. So Lance will be in Friday. It's you and me tomorrow and a whole lot more coming up the next couple of days between 2 and 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Christian, have a great trip, my friend. The radio will see you on Monday.
Well, you might hear my voice tomorrow depending on how lonely Jacob gets, but you never know. We might have to call in and make an appearance.
Well, enjoy your trip. We'll see you back here on Monday. Monday. Until then, I am back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.